Chapter 3. The Siren Under Everything. Mara Vale slept for 23 minutes in a chair that did not recline. She knew because the nurse at the folding table by the doors had written the time on a strip of tape and stuck it to the back of her hand. Someone had taped printer paper to the table's front edge and written "Returned, blip intake" in black marker. 0314. When Mara opened her eyes, the tape read 03.37 and the hospital ceiling above her was still the wrong ceiling. Not wrong in any way that mattered to anyone else. The tiles were clean. The lights were soft enough for a waiting room. Someone had replaced the old fluorescent hum with recessed panels that gave off no sound at all. That was the problem. Hospitals were supposed to hum. They were supposed to buzz and click and breathe through vents and call systems and the distant percussion of carts rolling over tile. This one sounded like it was holding its breath. Then the siren started. Mara sat up so fast the blanket fell off her knees. No one else moved. A woman across from her kept crying into a paper mask. A man in a security uniform argued quietly with a teenager who could not stop staring at his own hands. Two little kids slept on the floor under three adult coats. A volunteer in a yellow vest carried bottled water through the room like a person trying not to spill mercy. No siren. Mara pressed the heel of her hand against her ear. There, under the air system, under the voices, under the fluorescent silence that was not fluorescent anymore. A siren, far away and coming closer. She stood. Her legs did not like it. Her body had spent the last several hours proving it was alive by inventing new places to ache. Her knees hurt from the pavement. Her palms were raw from compressions. Her throat tasted like rain and exhaust and the chemical sweetness of adrenaline gone sour. Someone said her name. Mara turned toward the sound too sharply and nearly fell. The intake nurse caught her by the elbow. She was young enough that Mara wanted to distrust her on principle, which was unfair and did not make the impulse go away. "Ms. Vale," the nurse said, "you need to sit down." "Paramedic," Mara said. The nurse blinked. "I am a paramedic." She looked at Mara's uniform, at the old patch on the sleeve, at the badge clipped to her belt, with an expiration date 5 years dead. "Okay," the nurse said carefully. "Paramedic Vale, you still need to sit down." The siren rose. Mara looked past her to the glass doors at the end of the hall. "Ambulance coming in." The nurse glanced over her shoulder. "There are ambulances coming in every 2 minutes." "This one's wrong." That made the nurse pause. Mara hated that it worked. She hated the way the room made space around the sentence, as if everyone had been waiting for the returned people to start saying impossible things in useful tones. "Wrong how?" Mara listened. The sound slid under her skin and became pressure against her ribs. Rain on glass, wheels losing argument with pavement. A man's breath hitching under her hand. Ray Alvarez saying something from the driver's seat that she had not heard at the time because the crash had not happened yet. No, that was not true. Ray had not said it. Ray had been turning to dust. Still, Mara heard him now. "Tell my girls I tried." Her hand closed around nothing. The automatic doors opened. Cold air moved down the hall. Two paramedics came in with a stretcher between them and a man sitting upright on it. Gray with shock. One hand clamped around his own forearm. Blood ran between his fingers onto a towel, already dark with it. "Laceration," one paramedic called, "deep controlled pressure, possible tendon involvement." Mara saw the towel, she saw the arm. She saw, with a clarity that did not belong to sight, the moment 3 minutes from now when the man would stand because he thought he was fine. Faint halfway through telling everyone so, hit the corner of the intake desk with the back of his head and stopped breathing while 20 people watched. "Don't let him stand," Mara said. No one heard her. The nurse was still watching Mara's face. "Don't let him stand," Mara said again, louder. The man on the stretcher laughed weakly. "I'm good, I'm good. Someone else needs the bed." He swung one leg over the side. Mara moved. The nurse caught her too late. "No," Mara snapped. The word cracked across the hallway with enough authority to make both paramedics freeze. The injured man froze too, 1 foot above the floor. Mara pointed at him. "You sit, you bleed on the towel, you do not perform bravery at the intake desk." His mouth opened. Sit. He sat. 3 seconds passed, then his eyes rolled back. The paramedic behind him caught his shoulders before his skull met the desk. For a moment, no one spoke. The siren under the world went quiet. Mara realized she was breathing like she had run a block carrying gear. The young nurse looked at her differently now. Not like a patient, worse. Like a witness. They put Mara in an exam room after that, not because she needed one more than the hundreds of people appearing all over the city, but because people became easier to manage once they had a door. The room had a monitor mounted to the wall, 2 chairs, a cabinet with locked drawers, and a laminated poster explaining what to do if a patient became aggressive. Mara read the poster 3 times. She did not become aggressive, she became precise. That was worse, she catalogued what she knew. 5 years had passed, half the universe had returned. Her apartment lease had ended 4 years and 9 months ago. Her hospital credentials were inactive. Ray Alvarez had died at the crash site. Daniel Keane was alive in cardiac step down with 2 cracked ribs from her compressions and a wife nobody had located yet. Mara had vanished 1 second before dying and returned with her hands already making decisions. None of those facts explained the siren. None explained the man with the bleeding arm. None explained why, when she closed her eyes, she could still feel Ray's hands on a steering wheel she had never touched. She took the pen from the counter. The intake form sat on the chair beside her, mostly blank. Name, Mara Vale. Date of birth, current address, emergency contact. Mara wrote her own name again in the margin because it felt useful to see it outside her head. Mara Vale. Then she wrote Ray Alvarez, then Daniel Keane, then Elena Keane, though she had never met the woman and did not know if Elena was alive, dead, remarried, missing, or standing in some other hospital with 5 years of grief collapsing in her hands. The pen kept moving. It made a black line across the bottom of the page, then another above it, then a curve she did not intend. Mara stopped. She looked at what she had drawn. Not a road. Not an intersection. A cliff. Dark water below it. A flat horizon above. She turned the paper over. Her hands were shaking. The door opened. The young nurse stepped in with a paper cup of water and a protein bar. You should eat. I should do a lot of things. Start there. Mara took the water. Her body accepted it with humiliating gratitude. The nurse glanced at the overturned form. I didn't look, she said. Good. The patient you brought in, Daniel Keane, he's asking for you. Mara's first response was irritation. Of course he was asking for her. Patients did that. They reached for the last person who had told them to stay alive and mistook proximity for authority. Then she remembered that Dan had died with her. Or almost died. Or had been stolen from a death that had already set its hand on both of them. She hated every version of the sentence. Is he stable? Awake, confused. Cardiology says he needs monitoring, but he's stable for now. For now. Mara heard the words the way she heard sirens. Did you find Elena? The nurse's face did something small and professional. Not yet. That meant no one wanted to say the rest in front of Mara. It meant records were complicated. It meant 5 years had produced addresses, emergency contacts, maybe a death certificate, maybe a remarriage. Maybe nothing clean enough to hand to a man who had woken up still wearing hope on his finger. Take me to him. You're not cleared to leave this room. Mara stood. Then walk slowly and pretend I'm difficult to stop. The nurse stared at her for 1/2 a second. Then she sighed. This is a terrible idea. Most useful ideas are. No, most useful ideas involve paperwork. Mara almost smiled. It did not make it all the way to her mouth. Dan Keane looked smaller in the hospital bed. That was the thing nobody told families. Illness reduced people in unfair proportions. Big men became wrists, loud women became collarbones, children became eyelids. Dan had not seemed large in the ambulance exactly, but he had been a whole problem. A failing rhythm, a history, a ring, a body insisting on continuing. Now he was a man under warmed blankets, with leads on his chest and oxygen under his nose. He turned his head when Mara entered. You, he said. Me. His eyes moved over her face. You were in the ambulance. Yes. It crashed. Mara did not answer quickly enough. Dan closed his eyes. I remember the light. Mara pulled the chair closer with her foot and sat. The nurse stayed by the door, pretending not to listen. What light? Orange. Dan opened his eyes again. Not the ambulance. I mean, yes, that too. But after, before. I don't know. Mara's skin tightened. Dan. There was a shore, he said. The monitor beside him marked his heart in small green peaks. There was no water, he said, but I knew it was a shore. Mara looked at the monitor because it was easier than looking at him. You're medicated. Am I? Yes. Enough for that? No, the answer arrived too fast. Mara said nothing. Dan's hand moved on the blanket. The wedding ring flashed under the fluorescent panel. I heard someone, he said. A man, not me. Mara felt the room narrow. What did he say? Dan swallowed. Tell my girls I tried. The siren under the world returned so hard that Mara gripped the side rail. The nurse stepped forward. Mara? Dan looked from one woman to the other, frightened now because whatever he had said had made the person who saved him look like she was falling. I don't know who that is, he said. Mara did. Ray Alvarez smiled from the laminated photograph at the intersection, rain running down plastic over his printed face. Beloved husband, father, paramedic. Tell my girls I tried. Mara, the nurse said again. Mara stood, the room tilted, not physically, worse. Meaning tilted, the walls stayed where they were, the facts did not. Dan had heard Ray. Dan, who had been unconscious, dying, panicked, and then dust. Dan, who had never touched the wheel. Dan, who should not have carried anything out of that crash except bruises and debt, and a second chance he had not asked for. I need air, Mara said. You're in a hospital. Then I need a different hospital. She left before the nurse could decide whether that was funny. Outside, evening had turned the hospital windows black. Mara stood near the ambulance bay, wrapped in a donated sweatshirt over her ruined uniform. The sweatshirt said Evergreen Half Marathon, 2021. She had not run in years. She had not existed in years. Apparently that did not stop people from giving you clothes with other people's accomplishments on them. An ambulance backed into the bay. Its warning light swept over the wet concrete. Red, orange, red, orange. For one breath, the reflection became a flat burning line on black water. Mara shut her eyes. The siren did not stop. It was under the engine noise, under the radio chatter, under the slap of gurney wheels and the clipped voices of medics giving reports. It was under her own heartbeat. Not an alarm, a direction. She opened her eyes and looked toward the road. Somewhere, impossibly far away, the sound was calling other people by other names. Mara took the folded intake form from her pocket. She did not remember putting it there. On the back, beneath the cliff and the black water, she had written three words in handwriting that was not quite hers. What did it cost? Mara stared at the question until the letters blurred. Then another ambulance turned the corner and the siren under everything rose to meet it.